looked at this, you know, all the drumbeats for war, and all we saw was our loved ones were going to be used as cannon fodder for oil markets and empire building.
During the Korean War, one-third of all the population in North Korea was killed. One of the highest percentages of deaths in the history of the world, warfare.
Detainees have been held for weeks, if not months, without being brought before a judge, without their detention being judicially reviewed to see whether it's unfair or not.
My concern is about what my government is doing to my country with our foreign policy and our domestic policy and with our values and ideals that we once had.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, August 27, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Trading the cold shoulder for careful conversation, the U.S. and North Korea made their first direct contact in 4 months today, huddling on the sidelines of a multinational summit to work through a venomous stalemate over Pyongyang's nuclear program. China, South Korea, Japan, and Russia joined them in formal discussions, eager to apply delicate diplomacy to East Asia's most alarming security problem. Later, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State James Kelly and North Korean Deputy Foreign Minister Kim Jong-un sat in chairs off to the side and conferred. Two more U.S. soldiers were killed in combat yesterday, and the relief agency Oxfam became the fourth major international organization to pull some or all of its foreign staff out of Iraq because of the increasing danger. A day after the August 19th suicide truck bombing of the U.N. headquarters, which killed at least 23 people, the World Bank and International Monetary Fund said they would temporarily withdraw some foreign staff. Many U.N. foreign workers also have left the country for now. Jessica Lynch, the former prisoner of war who became a national hero when special forces allegedly rescued her from an Iraqi hospital, has been honorarily discharged from the U.S. Army, her lawyer said yesterday. The medical discharge clears the way for Lynch to pursue possible book or movie deals about her ordeal, Stephen Goodwin of the Charleston said. Though she has not spoken publicly about her time in Iraq, Lynch has said through a spokesperson that she plans to tell her story in a book to be published by the end of the year. President Bush spoke yesterday at the American Legion's 85th annual convention in St. Louis, Missouri. Military Families Speak Out co-founders Nancy Lesson and Charlie Richardson have a son who has just returned from Iraq. Peace Watch spoke with them today about their response to Bush's speech at the American Legion.
It's very interesting because it's all about terrorism and the war on terrorism and how we're fighting a war on terrorism. We'd like to say that we think that's a ridiculous approach to solving the problem of terrorism. In fact, what we're doing is creating more terrorism, not solving terrorism, and we're doing it at the expense of the lives of Americans and the lives of innocent Iraqis.
Did you have any reaction to his making this address, delivering this speech to the American Legion?
Well, I think, you know, the president is trying to use every stage he can to drive up his numbers, to make his polling numbers look better, but the number of American dead are rising at about one a day.
Charlie and Nancy, you all are co-founders of Military Families Speak Out. What prompted your activism, Nancy?
Oh, that would go back years and years, but in terms of Military Families Speak Out, what really prompted it was when Joe deployed in August of 2002, and we looked at this, all the drumbeats for war, and all we saw was our loved ones were going to be used as cannon fodder for oil markets and empire building. And we made a poster that said, "Our son is a Marine, don't send him to war for oil." We met another family in October, and in November, the two families formed Military Families Speak Out. We felt that we had a great need to speak out against the invasion and a very special voice with which to speak. And we also saw that everyone who was saying, "We got to go to war," they weren't going anywhere, nor were their loved ones. It was our loved ones, and so we had a real stake in this. both because of our concern for our troops and our loved ones, but also because of what we felt was going to happen with the people of Iraq, with our country, and with the world if we pursued this reckless and immoral and illegal course of action.
Mm. And so your son, Joe, just returned from Iraq not long ago. What was his mental state like after he returned?
You know, we are very careful. We don't speak for Joe. He was very happy to be home. We were incredibly thrilled, obviously, to have him home. One of our biggest concerns right now is the fact that Joe's coming home and other troops are being sent over to replace him. And we don't think that's what should happen.
And so if you could change U.S. policy regarding Iraq, what changes would you make?
Well, right now we say bring them home. Bring the troops home. Get them out of a place where they should never have been in the first place. But in terms of the underlying policy, we think that illegal, immoral wars of aggression should never be fought by our military. And so there's a fundamental policy changes that need to be made to prevent this from ever happening again. What we think needs to happen now is for the decision to be made to bring the troops home, and then and only then is there going to be a real discussion about the next steps, and the next steps have to involve having the Iraqi people be front and center in deciding what happens in their country. It has to involve U.S. resources to help clean up the depleted uranium and damaged infrastructure, but in no circumstances can this be under U.S. military control.
And so if you had a chance to speak with President Bush right now, what would your advice be to him? What would you say?
Well, in fact, we are speaking to President Bush along with hundreds of military families from across the country, veterans who are speaking out against this war, and others. And we're saying one very clear and simple message at this point: bring them home now. Make the decision to get our troops out of there. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. Get them out. We would then want to have the conversation that Nancy just referred to about the policies of preventive and preemptive war that the Bush administration has put in place that basically claim the U.S.'s right to go around and invade countries around the world whenever they think it's appropriate.
But the one thing I would add to that is it's not just President Bush that needs to hear this message. We want to bring it to Congress as well. They are decision makers. They made the wrong decision in October to illegally turn over this decision to go to war to George Bush, but they can turn that around. They have a responsibility, and what is most frightening at this time is that we're hearing several Congress people saying, well, the situation in Iraq is very problematic, and what we need to do is send in more troops. And there was even a New York Times editorial a couple days ago that suggested that the appropriate response to the increasing violence is to send in more troops. And what we say to all of those who are thinking in that direction is that there are over 58,000 names on a black wall in Washington, D.C., that cry out for just the opposite, that we have to have learned, we must have learned that in this situation that we're in now, the appropriate response is not sending in more troops. The appropriate response is bringing them home now.
At the same time, however, we do know that the president is saying that, you know, we will not turn back or cower to terrorists. But let me ask you both this, Nancy and Charlie. In January 2003, the Veterans Administration issued new regulations limiting enrollment in the plan. And if a vet earns more than between $24,000 and $29,000 a year, he or she must pay a premium to enroll in the VA plan. Are you at all familiar with that provision?
Actually, that's one of the provisions that we've seen in terms of the cutbacks and rollbacks in benefits to veterans. And we think that this is, you know, just another piece of immoral activities that end up hurting our troops. Being over in Iraq is certainly hurting them, but what is being done by this administration in Washington, D.C., in terms of the care that they need and the kinds of benefits that they need to receive, I mean, it's more than adding insult to injury. It's really adding injury to injury.
Mm. At the same time that the Bush administration uses the mantra, support our troops, To beat up, frankly, those who oppose the war, they're also doing many things that clearly show that they don't really support the troops. They support using the troops as cannon fodder, but they don't stand behind them when they come home.
There's also a move by the administration to reduce the absent from home pay and the allowance for dangerous duty to soldiers. Were you aware of that proposal?
No, very much so. It's not even ironic, I don't know the word, but when last month George Bush said in response to some concerns about armed Iraqi resistance, George Bush said, bring them on, really taunting those that are shooting at our loved ones to keep it up. He says that, on that day, and then comes the news that they want to take away their combat pay. It's just, again, it's this adding injury to injury, putting on the backs of our troops the budget cuts, the funding cuts that they saved and sent to Halliburton and Bechtel and those who are contributing to the coffers there. The solution, though, and I think we need to be really clear about this, it's outrageous that they're talking about taking away combat pay as our troops are being shot at. But they're in a place where they never should have been. They're being shot at because they're where they shouldn't be. And the real solution here is to bring them home.
Some of the soldiers we've spoken with say that even though the conditions were horrid, that they would still serve the country again if called.
Our soldiers would serve the country. That's not the question. And our soldiers would, as we say, walk through fire to defend the country and defend the Constitution, as their oath said. But that's not what's happening in Iraq. They're not defending the country. They're pursuing oil markets. They're pursuing dreams of empire. The president has sent them on this mission, and it's not about defense of our country.
Have you all heard any reports about suicides among the soldiers?
We have, actually, and it's hard, we hear these euphemisms, non-combat related gunshot wound, and you don't know if that was like an accidental firing of a weapon or that was suicide or what. We have certainly heard from military families who have heard from their loved ones about serious depression and anxiety that they think has to do with the conditions, about being stuck there, about being told you're going home, no, you're not going home, about being in 130-degree heat with not enough water and not enough food and lacking equipment and lacking protection and being there for all the wrong reasons.
Okay. Nancy Lessen and Charlie Richardson, co-founders of Military Families Speak Out. Any final thoughts on your part?
We just call on people to contribute their voices to the campaign, to bring them home now, to speak out against this war, not just this war. In speaking out against this war, we are speaking out against the next war that's being planned. We're speaking out against a policy that's guaranteed to take us into other wars in the near future, and a policy that's not going to make this world safer from terrorism, but in fact is going to make it less safe.
And we invite everyone to our campaign website, www.bringthemhomenow.org. And for all military families who want to speak out against what's going on right now, visit our website, Military Families Speak Out, and that's www.mfso.org.
Nancy Lessen and Charlie Richardson, co-founders of Military Families Speak Out, a coalition opposed to the war in Iraq.
Hi, this is Scott Gurian, the producer of Peace Watch. If you're enjoying listening to this show, I urge you to take a moment and make a donation to ensure that this program continues. You can make a secure online pledge by visiting our website at www.pacifica.org or send us a tax-deductible check or money order to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, 20009. And note that it's a donation for Peace Watch. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Iraqis whose family members are being held at American-run detention camps are facing daily worries and distress over the stories they hear of what's happening inside those facilities. Thousands of Iraqi detainees and prisoners of war are held captive in these prisons, where critics say human rights violations occur on a daily basis. Ahmed Al-Rawi, Peace Watch's resident correspondent in Baghdad, Iraq, has spent the past several weeks speaking to some of the detainees, and he presents this extended report.
There are now three main detention facilities in Iraq, where more than 5,000 Iraqi detainees are held. The first one is the infamous airport camp. The second is Umm Qasr detention camp. And the third one is Abu Ghraib prison that holds more than 500 detainees. Iraqis are being now detained for different reasons. The first and most common one is the possession of banned weapons, going out during night curfew, being a senior member of the former ruling Ba'ath Party accused of committing a crime against humanity, and other crimes. But there are many innocents inside these detention camps. Uday, for example, is a 32-year-old man who prefers that his last name not to be used on the radio. He was detained in the Baghdad International Airport camp, where he says he was treated very badly. Here is his story.
They don't let us wash ourselves very often, so we become infected with scabies. They want us to leave the prison sick and diseased. Something happened in the airport detention facility that no Iraqi would accept. An American woman soldier threw one bar of soap for 20 Iraqis to bathe with. Do you believe that they threw the soap back at her in her face? Believe me, when you shake hands with an American, he washes his hands carefully, as if we were contagious. You cannot even shake hands with an American. I defy you if you could do it without him sterilizing his hands. And on the radio, they broadcast every day that Iraqis have no right to touch Americans. Once it happened by coincidence and they ran to sterilize themselves. Iraqis really felt humiliated because of it. Usually they'll give you water, but no soap. What's the use when you're in the midst of such hot weather? We were desperate for cold water and cigarettes, but the usual answer was no. If you collect the garbage, then you could get a cigarette, but you smoke it outside. It is because we Iraqis are garbage. There's neither electricity nor water, except a bottle occasionally. We can't wash ourselves to pray, and if we want, we have to use the only bottle of drinking water they give us to clean ourselves so as to pray. Our cells were like an animal stockade. We are animals in their eyes, and this is the way they have been ordered to treat us. Someone once praised Saddam Hussein in front of the American soldiers, and everything suddenly got out of hand. He ended up receiving many blows on his head. Don't they say that we have freedom of speech? Another kind of torture we're subjected to is to be left under the sun when our hands and legs are tied tightly and our faces are pressed in the dirt. How could someone breathe? There were even two Iraqi women with me, isolated in a different tent, but I have no idea why they were detained. The bad thing was that we had to share the same toilets. For food, they gave us only one pack a day. We complained, but to no avail. They said this is the kind of food we have. One of the detainees who had blood in his urine complained, saying he cannot drink water from the tankers since it's polluted. The Americans said that they're not ready to offer water from their own mineral water bottles. When I first entered, I heard that some Red Cross personnel and senior American military officers visited the camp in order to see the conditions of the detainees. The American guards began to throw bars of soap at us. At the beginning, some of the detainees were happy, but many of them developed rashes from the soap since it had been so long since they'd bathed. Others were not happy at all, since they knew the Americans were only afraid that our condition would be documented by the Red Cross and would ruin their reputation. So they threw some soap at us, disregarding the fact that people may become sick from it.
45-year-old Abu Qasim sold electronics equipment in a small store in Baghdad. He says American soldiers confiscated all his goods. He was taken away as a detainee on a false claim.
When nature called, they gave us plastic bags. Imagine a room without any ventilation, and you have these bags in there while all the doors are closed. At night, it's totally dark. We had only pieces of newspaper to fan ourselves with, and the room was usually filled with bugs. The room in the prison had no fans or cooling system and was without water or food. They even held children in the fifth sector prison. Some as young as 12 or 13 years old were put in isolation. They didn't commit any crimes. They were just brought into prisons with their fathers. Some were barefoot and put in cells only 1 meter by 2 meters. In the airport detention camp, some were beaten to death. 2 days before my arrival, one detainee was killed as a result of his beating. Female American soldiers tortured the detainees by sand. They buried the detainees halfway in the burning sand for 5 to 6 hours. We were dizzy all the time, trying to find water to wash or to drink. We were hungry too, since the food was not suitable for us all. It smelled terrible. It tasted detestable, and it made us sick. My brother, who was with me, can testify. He began to urinate blood. When we were taken to the airport detention camp, he showed them his underwear and the traces of blood on it. They told him they have no medicine here. He wanted anything to treat him, even if it was expired medical tablets. Is it possible that they don't have medicine? Why did they come accusing Saddam of not giving medicine to the people? At least in the days of Saddam, we used to take medicine by paying half of its price. The Americans do not give us a thing at all by leaving us hanging between life and death. This is our tragedy. The man who cannot endure all this may die if he remains for 1 or 2 weeks. I got out well, though I have become thinner. In prison, you cannot even shave your beard, and the hygiene conditions are seriously lacking. American women soldiers act snobbishly in front of us. We Iraqis cannot endure this treatment. They make these female soldiers throw one bar of soap for 30 people every 3 days. People jump on each other to have the piece of soap. This is a humiliation for us.
Adil, an Iraqi in his 40s, married with 2 kids, was taken as a prisoner of war when the American forces entered Baghdad. He was taken into custody in the airport prison first, then to different detention facilities.
We remained in the airport one day where we had no food at all. We slept on the ground in the dust, and it was very cold at night. Some of the POWs had no clothes on them. Some of them slept with their underwear only. We woke up the second day, and they offered us bad food. The toilets consisted of 2 pots that we had to use. Lights were always on us when we slept. We remained there for 4 days, and the lights were on all the time. The condition of the water was awful, since it had a certain smell of plastic. In the second camp, the toilets were very bad, too. They were 2 holes in the grounds that weren't very deep, and we slept on the ground in the dust, where there were scorpions and snakes. Many detainees were bitten by those scorpions and snakes. American soldiers used to scream at us if they found anything wrong, and their usual expression was, "Fuck you." I told my colleagues that the soldiers were insulting us with this term. In the Amin Ali bin Abi Talib detention camp in Nasiriya, I entered a room, and 5 American soldiers pushed me. They pulled my hands behind my back. They secured them with iron handcuffs, and they put a black semi-transparent bag over my head. They had a police dog with them, and they strip-searched me. Then they took me to an unknown place where I had to lower my head all the time. Then I fainted because of the suffocation and the pain in my hands. I remained a whole day in this position, with my eyes blindfolded and the handcuffs around my wrist. I was unable to use my hands later, and my fingers remained inactive until I returned to my home, since I lost all sense in them. In the Al Yusufiya detention camp, someone was injured by 2 bullets lodged inside his body. He was crying out of pain. The American soldier only brought him 2 tablets. We expected him to die shortly, since what can 2 tablets do for him? He was treated, but the 2 bullets were still inside him. In one of the camps in Qaisir, the food was very bad. The responsible man was a Kuwaiti citizen who did not provide the detainees with decent food. The detainees went on a strike, a hunger strike, and the American soldiers beat them, forcing them to end the strike. One detainee rejected the beatings and resisted. One of the American soldiers approached him and ordered him to rise, and he refused. The American soldier kept throwing dust at him, and the detainee reacted immediately by hitting the soldier. One female American soldier shot at the detainee, and he died a moment later. When the detainee's cousin came to pull his relative back, he was shot dead also. If anyone makes a mistake of any kind, they make him go out to sit in the dust under the burning sun for 3 to 5 hours. The area itself is filled with an unimaginable amount of dust. All the 7,000 to 8,000 Iraqi prisoners of war had money with them when they were captured. The Americans took the money, but they didn't return any of it to us when we were released, and they didn't even provide us with pocket money. They just gave us a lift to either Basra or Nasiriya. But all of our families are in Baghdad, so how did they expect us to get there without any money? And my car remained in the same place where I was detained. So far, they haven't told me if it is still available in the same place, nor let me go to that place to check where it is.
Human Rights Watch has expressed its concern and worries about the condition of Iraqi detainees. Hani Majelli, executive director of the group's Middle East and North Africa division, says that he held talks with the coalition authorities about this issue.
We've been concerned about access to the detainees by their families, by lawyers, and the lack of proper judicial procedures. Detainees have been held for weeks, if not months, without being brought before a judge, without their detention being judicially reviewed to see whether it's unfair or not. Clearly, these have been serious shortcomings. The message, I think, is clear, and it has reached those responsible. And they have told us that they're moving as fast as they can to rectify those shortcomings.
Amnesty International has also showed its concern for the condition of the detention camps and the treatment Iraqi detainees receive by the American detaining authorities. Dr. Saeed Boumamdouha is Amnesty International's representative in Iraq.
Well, Amnesty International issued a report detailing the current human rights violations by the coalition forces. These violations include detentions, ill-treatment in detention centers and prisons, lack of access to lawyers, lack of access to families, the brutal search methods taken by the U.S. forces, also the excessive use of force, killing of civilians in some incidents. Now there are about 5,000 detainees, and they include also POWs, security internees, and all other criminal suspects. Families don't know where the detainees are held. They go from one place to another. They don't find any answer to their questions about the whereabouts of the detainees. Another issue is the ill-treatment of detainees, and the most common methods is to keep detainees exposed to the sun for many, many hours. We met with a number of former detainees who have been released, and they told us about the very, very tough conditions, and they are not given enough water, they are not given enough food. Immediately after arrest, they put plastic bags on their heads for a few hours. Sometimes it's quite suffocating in this heat. Their hands are tied behind their backs with very, very tight plastic kind of rope. And also the fact that some of them are beaten up, put on the ground. You know, they are kept lying on the ground for, some time, sometimes brutally, with the soldiers having their feet on their necks and on the ground. And this is quite common now. The people we interviewed more or less all said the same thing about this aggressive treatment, or it's ill treatment that's not accepted in international law.
Amnesty International acknowledges the fact that there are women and children inside the camps, as some former detainees have mentioned.
We are aware of the detention of women and children, but they are kept separate. They're not in the same prison itself. They are kept in separate detention centers, or at least in separate, for example, tents. But we cannot comment on whether they are innocent or they are criminals or they have committed crime. For us, anyone, even for those who committed crimes, they should be brought to justice without delay. They should have basic rights as well. They should have access to lawyers, they should have access to families, and they should have a fair trial according to international standards.
Along with the failure of the American administration to restore security and essential services to Iraq, nearly 5 months into the occupation, as well as the ongoing accidental killings of Iraqi civilians by U.S. military forces, the treatment of detainees is fostering negative attitudes among average Iraqis towards the American occupation and towards the United States in general. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Ahmed Al-Rawi in Baghdad.
I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.